above the Diamantina. A human story from Northwest Queensland.
Thanks to his painstaking investigations, Napoleon Bonaparte has picked up quite a number of clues bearing on the aeroplane mystery. Sergeant Cox has given him some illuminating information about the residents of the Golden Dawn district, and Boney has also persuaded Dr. Knowles to tell him his life story. At this moment, John Nettlefold and Ted Sharp, the bus stockman, are standing on the veranda of the homestead.
Storm coming up, Ted?
Looks like it, Mr. Nettlefold. They're early this year.
I think we'll have a good one tonight, then probably two or three fine days before the storms really set in.
Oh, yes. In another week, I think there'll be water in the Diamantina again. I wouldn't be surprised if we had some real good floods this year.
Neither would I.
You see, do you still think it necessary to have a guard over that girl? Surely that fellow isn't going to make another attempt.
Bowie tells me it's more than likely.
Oh, has he found out anything more?
Quite a lot, apparently. I'm afraid I can't tell you because he told me in confidence. You know, I thought Bill Sykes was the cleverest tracker possible, but this fella Boney can run rings around him.
Really?
By the way, he was asking me about you just now. Wants a word with you.
Oh, what about?
That I don't know. I'll tell him you're here.
Good night, Mr. Nettlefold.
Good night. Good evening, Mr. Sharp.
Good evening, Mr. Bonaparte. Looks a bit like a storm, doesn't it?
Yes, I have been thinking that. By the way, everybody calls me Boney.
Not everybody calls me Ted.
I understand, Ted. You come from Warrego Down district in New South Wales. Is that right?
Who told you that?
Oh, I really don't know. Someone or other in Golden Dawn. I know the Wyatts down in Warrego, do you?
Slightly. I left there a long time ago, you know.
Yes. Seeing that you were down there, I was wondering whether you know anything about sheep.
Oh, a little. Why?
Will you give me the benefit of your experience?
I don't see any reason why I shouldn't.
Thank you. I felt sure that you would be willing to assist me. I want you to tell me why you did not go to Mitchell's Well on the night of October the 28th, and why you did go to Gurney's Hotel.
Oh, well, I'll tell you. I slipped across the hotel to buy a bottle of whiskey. It was a warm night, you understand, and I felt like a drink.
Why did you not tell me that before?
Well, Mr. Nettlefold is rather strict on the subject of drink.
Was that why you rang up Ned Hamblin and asked him to back up your story of having gone to Mitchell's Well?
Well, yes. You see, I wouldn't have Mr. Nettlefold know about anything for anything.
Oh, well, so far as that is concerned, it is no affair of mine. But when I hear that you went to Gurney's Hotel expressly to interview an unknown stranger, it does become a concern of mine.
So you found that out too, have you?
Of course.
I see.
Who was that man? And what was your business with him?
I am not going to tell you.
Oh, why not? I shall eventually find out all I want to know. So you might as well tell me now. You are simply wasting my valuable time.
It will take you a darn long time to find out.
Oh, no, it will not. Sit down, please, Ted. I have not yet finished with you.
I have no intention of answering your questions. I'll make that plain right now.
We shall see about that.
My private affairs have nothing to do with your case. And therefore, I am not going to discuss them with a confounded half-caste. Struth, you've got a darn hide.
Sit down, man, and do not be such a fool. You are not dealing with a half-caste. You are dealing now with an intelligence. An intelligence having the powers of a police officer.
I don't care a tuppenny damn about that.
There are some detectives I know who do not respect confidences. I am not one of them. Although I am a half-caste, I take pride in being a man of honor. What I wish you to tell me will be treated with the strictest confidence, providing, of course, that it has no bearing on my investigations.
Well, it has no bearing on them, and for that reason I don't intend to say anything. The fact that you're a detective doesn't give you the right to pry into everyone's private affairs.
Permit me to differ, Ted. In ordinary circumstances, I would not attempt to pry into your private affairs. But the circumstances of this case are far from being ordinary.
I suppose you're right there.
Now listen to me, Ted. There is no need for us to be enemies in this matter. In this district, a crime has been committed. Within 50 miles, there are only about a dozen men. It is absolutely essential that each one of those men be proved innocent of complicity. You understand that?
Yes.
Very well. On the night that the crime was committed, you met a stranger in mysterious circumstances. Very mysterious circumstances. You take the trouble to invent a lie about it. And you take further trouble to ring up Ned Hamlin and ask him to back your lie that you visited Mitchell's well.
I tell you, my movements have nothing to do with your case. Surely that's enough for you, isn't it?
Then if your business was perfectly innocent, why hesitate to tell me the facts of it? I am trying to discover who poisoned that girl's brandy. And unless I find out very soon, she is going to die. Do you not see how important even the smallest clue is?
But my private affairs have nothing to...
I am very glad to hear that. In that case, you can tell me who was the man who met you at Gurner's hotel that night.
I will not tell you. You can go to the devil.
Just one moment, Ted.
Do you suspect me of being the criminal?
I can do nothing else but suspect you, Ted.
Who's that? Elizabeth!
I'm sorry, but I couldn't help overhearing what you were saying just then. Your voices were raised.
Elizabeth, please don't take any notice of what's being said.
Ted, I think you should apologize to Mr. Bonaparte for your slighting reference to his birth.
If only Mr. Sharp would be open with me, my investigations would be greatly assisted. As for my being a half-caste, well, that is entirely a personal matter.
He had no business to talk about you like that.
That is of no importance, Miss Nettlefold. But as I pointed out, Mr. Sharp's business at Gurner's Hotel, although it may have no connection with my present case, may have some significance for me. I must know where everyone in the district was on that vital night. Now come, Ted. Do not make matters harder than is necessary for me.
I can assure you, my business that night had absolutely no connection whatever with the aeroplane or the drug girl.
In that case, be reasonable. Give Mr. Bonaparte the information he wants. Can't you see, Ted, that by refusing to speak, you're forcing suspicions on yourself?
I can't say anything. Can't you understand, Elizabeth?
No, I can't.
Oh, but Elizabeth...
I don't want to hear any more, Mr. Sharp.
Oh, I see.
I can't understand why you refuse to account for your actions. Don't you realize the state that girl is in? If you won't speak, you may be hastening on her death. Of course, if your actions that night were something you're ashamed of...
Elizabeth, please...
Miss Nettlefold.
Oh, all right. I can't say what my business was that night. To do so would ruin all my plans, smash all my ambitions... No, I can say nothing. Oh, I wish you could understand.
I think I understand only too well. Good night, Bernie.
Confound you, Bonaparte! Why can't you mind your own business? Good night!
Oh, this love is a wonderful thing. Since you're going back today, Sergeant Cox, would you find out from the Golden Dawn butcher where he has been buying his sheep?
Yes, of course, Bernie.
And also to whom he has sold sheep skins. You made a note about the nitroglycerine and the examination of the people at Gurner's Hotel, haven't you?
Yes, I'll attend to that.
Good. Now, I may be away for several days.
Where are you going?
On a walkabout, with modern transport, as a matter of fact. The Coolabah runabout truck. If anything of importance should crop up, do not communicate with me. I will keep in touch with you from time to time. Meanwhile, keep your eye on that exchange girl, Beryl Saunders, and her brother, the night operator.
Do you think there's a leakage of information there?
I am sure of it. How else could the destruction of the aeroplane have followed so close on the news of its discovery by Nettlefold? Either they are talking, or else the line has been tapped. Now, tell me, is there a policeman at St. Albans?
Yes, a mounted man.
Then perhaps after seeing Gurner at his hotel, you could run into St. Albans and find out whether a strange car passed through about the time when the aeroplane was stolen. Possibly a few days before, even.
Yes, all right, I'll do that. Well, hello, Knowles.
Hello. Are you ready to start, Sergeant?
Yes, as soon as you are.
Dr. Knowles, tell me, how is your patient?
Unchanged. Oh, Bonnie. Yesterday you were talking about some method of finding out what was in the patient's mind.
That is so.
Then why in the deuce don't you do something about it? If you can read the girl's mind, why don't you?
I did not say I could read her mind, but I have sent for a man who may be able to do so.
Ah, splendid. And when will he be here?
That I cannot say. He lives right up on the Gulf of Carpentaria. His name is Illawarra. He is a tribal chief of some importance.
Good heavens, and what can he do?
By merely touching a man's hand, he can read what is in his mind. I know this because he has demonstrated this power to me. I am glad to see you are not laughing, Dr. Knowles. So many doctors do when I tell them about Illawarra.
Well, I don't say I believe you, Boney, but I have great respect for the powers of the Aborigines. I'm not sure that in some respects they don't know more than we white men. I suppose they'll find him quite easily.
Yes, well, I hope so,
Couldn't
Doctor.
I find him? I could fly up there now and bring him back.
Well, by this time, Doctor, I feel sure an aeroplane will have been dispatched for him. He will probably arrive here in a few days' time. Oh, by the way, Mr. Nettlefold, at my request, has relieved Ted Sharp of his night duty.
Is that essential?
Well, yes, Sergeant. I think so. Do you know anyone who could be trusted to guard the young lady satisfactorily?
Oh, now, let me see. I've got a brother-in-law across at Eureka. He was once in the police force. He's retired now, but he's still a pretty active man.
Splendid. Well, Sergeant, would you go and telephone him now?
All right. Excuse me, will you?
Yes. Tell me, Doctor, are you staying long in Golden Dawn?
No, I'm only going there to get certain medicines and drugs suggested to me by Dr. Stanisforth. I intend to fly back here this afternoon. Oh, what makes you think there'll be another attempt on the girl's life?
Intuition.
Really?
Yes. The purpose of that crash was obviously to get rid of the girl. So was the poisoning of the brandy. Since both failed, we may expect another attempt to silence her.
By Jove. Have you any idea who the man is, Boney?
I am not yet quite sure. But I have an idea, Doctor. I have a very good idea.